And I think that's what made it a very successful trip for us, because each day we were just like, oh my God, that was amazing. And you know, the other part too, being at sea level, you're like, oh, we can climb about 7,000 feet today and just ski amazing snow with very little risk, looking at the ocean and have an amazing time. And for me, you know, that's recalibrated as I've gotten older. For me, those are more important than skiing a steep line, which I hate to admit, but eventually all the steep lines I've skied, I kind of forget them. Like, I can remember little bits and pieces. They seemed super important at the time, like worth risking one's life for. But, you know, 10, 15 years later, I'm like, oh, I kind of remember who I did that with. And I remember a little bit about it, but not that much. Whereas I got to say, on this trip, I don't think I'm going to forget that anytime soon. Like that.
Welcome to All Aspects, a podcast where we explore, discuss, and celebrate adventure culture and outdoor lifestyle. It is our mission to educate, inform, and entertain our fellow adventurers about the inherent risks that surround us every time we go outside to play, and to provide you with the knowledge and tools to help you do the things you love the most in the safest way possible. All Aspects is brought to you by Aspect Abbey. Aspect Abbey is on a mission to save lives by making avalanche safety simple. It is the only app that tells you where the high and low risk zones are for today's avalanche danger. With a suite of built-in tools like forecast verification, slope meter, and gear checklist, Aspect Abbey is the new safety standard for avalanche risk management. Remember, there are dozens of apps that get you into the backcountry, but there's only one that's designed to bring you home, and that's Aspect Abbey. Go to aspectabbey.com to learn more or download the app to start your 30-day free trial. Thank you, Aspect Abbey, for making this show possible, and thank you for listening. All right, let's get to the show.
All righty, Jeff. Jeffrey. Jefferton. Welcome back.
Danger Dave. Good to see you.
Welcome back to both the podcast and to the States. We were just in Iceland for, well, you were there for 6 days, 7 days. I was there for a little longer.
It all blended together. I think it was a week, but man, it felt like significantly more.
Yeah, it was crazy how having such little night time led to the whole trip feeling like sort of one really long day of adventuring, not like a week. Just to set the scene, we were leaving Colorado just kind of right as the snowpack here is starting to get more predictable. You know, we're starting to get those warmer days. The corn was starting to be harvestable. And then we left to head to Iceland where all of us, the whole crew we were with, know nothing about the snowpack. And it was super wintery when we got there.
Yeah,
it was complete different conditions. You know, we went from t-shirt to straight up layer. And the kind of the craziest part about it was I just remember being in the airport when I was in Reykjavik and started looking at the avalanche report for Iceland, you know, and trying to see like where we were going to be. I didn't fully know where we were going to be, but it was a shocking avalanche report because I've never seen it say we were at considerable danger, like that's fine. But then it said we had a wind slab and an old snow problem, which persistent layers in a coastal snowpack are pretty uncommon. It's like something that we've talked about on this and also just we know this. But I guess Iceland had a really weird kind of tail end of their winter where it just got cold and then just stayed cold. It just kept stacking storms and it got an old snow layer. And was it one incident or two incidents? A couple of people got caught. It doesn't sound like anyone was killed.
The best photo I saw was the snow cat at the ski area above the house we stayed at triggered a D3 right on the side of the trail. It was like, whoa. And you see the snow cat and it looks like a toy snow cat because the D3 is so
big. My God. Okay, so that all happened before we got there. And the crazy thing was like, it said D3s and D4s even could be triggered on all slopes. I've never seen the whole compass all blacked out. Like the critical danger zone was 100% of the zones.
Yeah, so to recap, you're getting on the plane and you're seeing considerable danger. So human triggered avalanches are likely.
Right.
You got an old snow problem, and we know that old snow problem kills about 95% of the victims. And you also have a wind slab. and there are going to be D3s, which is like destroy a car or wood framed house, to D4s, which means a village or a forest, old growth forest. So it's pretty intimidating, right?
Yeah, it was definitely it was over my pay grade as far as, you know, our plan was I was going to hop off the plane and then you guys were going to snag me in Akureyri and we were going to just head off to go ski because you guys had been there for a day already. So I was like, kind of like the one on lag.
And we go ski right off
exactly.
The plane. Yeah.
So yep. I was like, well, how are we going to manage this? Because of all the factors we just said, I was completely over my head. I had no idea how to handle this. So maybe figured we could walk through this a little bit. Not just the first day, but the whole week we were there, conditions were changing really rapidly. Something we learned about Iceland quickly, which sounds silly to say out loud now, but it's sort of the Arctic. And so things changed there even more rapidly than in Colorado, what we're used to. So we had to really adapt quickly and we had to have a good game plan going into the day of if this isn't going to work or if we get somewhere and the conditions are different than what we thought, like what's our plan B, what's our plan C, etc. So I thought it'd be cool if we could just maybe kind of do an Iceland debrief and then maybe talk about how we went about planning and staying, you know, within our safety guidelines in a totally new environment with rapidly changing conditions and super high consequences, to be frank, probably the most dangerous conditions we were in all season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think the first part is changing our mindset. And instead of being like, hey, we're going to go really aggressive, it's like, whoa, we are going to go conservative and we're going to go beautiful.
and hold up, just to like give everyone the full view, the reason we had to change our mindset was because you kind of pitched this idea as like we're going to go ski corn in Iceland because that's what you did last year.
So
we were all expecting that. That's why we had to have this big shift in our whole game plan because we were like, cool, it's gonna be t-shirt weather, we're gonna be skiing steep corn, it's gonna be awesome. And then winter struck and we were in a totally different situation. So continue from there. We had to adjust our mindset.
So the professionals, we would call this your strategic mindset. And you could be very conservative all the way to very aggressive. And that informs, hey, you know, like sets the expectations in the organization and to the clients and says, hey, you know, are we stepping out today because it's going to be more aggressive because conditions are very favorable? Or are we falling back because, oof, we got a big storm and it's, you know, conditions aren't favorable, or are we entrenchment, meaning nothing's changed. We're dealing with a persistent weak layer, an old snow problem, and we just have to be conservative because there's no way to manage this. You can't just use your guide wizard hat and wave the wand and say, it'll be okay because I say it's okay. You know, and like you said, the weird thing was the persistent weak layer was everywhere. And we were like, oh, that's not fair. you can't avoid it. And so that changed our mindset really quickly. However, one thing going for us is we were going to a magical landscape where if I'm skiing under the setting sun, looking at the ocean and the sun reflecting off the water, I'm so blissed out. And, you know, people in the group, it brought tears to their eyes because it was just heartbreakingly beautiful to ski into the sunset on the Arctic Circle. And you're like, look, next stop is Greenland straight ahead. Or to your right is the North Pole and there's nobody here. And this is just magic. And so, you know, changing the mindset and being like, hey, we thought we were going to be skiing steep couloirs and big faces with spring-like conditions, probably low danger conditions. And that wasn't the case. It was for the 40-year average, they were saying this was freakishly cold and it was full winter conditions. And we had a winter snowpack complete with winter snowpack problems. So we had to change our mindset. That was the first part, was like, okay, we are going to tiptoe in through the terrain and it's going to be about skiing something that's beautiful rather than rad. Like there will be no rad on this trip. and just being like, okay. And finding out, hey, you know what? It doesn't have to be super steep to have the best trip of your life. And it's a lot about being with good friends, people you love, in a place that's just absolutely magical. and exploring a new culture. And I've never done this before, but I imagine my parents are in Albania right now on a bike tour. And that's the kind of experience they're having. It's not rad, but they're eating great food, traveling through a beautiful country with people that they love, and having an adventure. And I think that's what made it a very successful trip for us, because each day we were just like, oh my God, that was amazing. And, you know, the other part too, being at sea level, you're like, oh, we can climb about 7,000 feet today and just ski amazing snow with very little risk, looking at the ocean and have an amazing time. And for me, you know, that's recalibrated as I've gotten older. For me, those are more important than skiing a steep line, which I hate to admit, but eventually all the steep lines I've skied, I kind of forget them. Like, I can remember little bits and pieces. They seemed super important at the time, like worth risking one's life for. But, you know, 10, 15 years later, I'm like, oh, I kind of remember who I did that with. And I remember a little bit about it, but not that much. Whereas I got to say, on this trip, I don't think I'm going to forget that anytime soon. Like, the afterglow, the half-life of the trip, it's still with me. I don't know. Is it the same with you?
I'm still having like Iceland dreams.
Yeah.
Like, my brain's like, what are you doing? Why are we not skiing every day? That was ideal. Yeah. Okay. So I agree with that. The way we scaled back, and we ended up doing it like kind of more of a tour, literally just finding really cool zones that we could effectively hit a bunch of different areas. You know, I guess it's worth maybe telling viewers or listeners the whole, like, it's the ocean, and then it just kind of goes up in a way up into these crazy peaks. And so we could find these zones, and we should talk about this in a sec about how kind of every day we had to change. It was kind of like snowy, swirly every day, and we kind of had to pick our zones depending on like where we thought the patch of sunlight was going to be that day, which meant that we had to be really, really active, and we couldn't just sit back and be like, okay, it snowed everywhere. We'd be like really active with where was the wind, where did it come from, where did it go, where did this, because for people who don't know, I mean, Iceland is essentially a giant rock in a huge river of weather. So it just has swirling weather. It's not like in the US where you generally have storms coming one direction or the other. It's every angle all the time. So you have to be really, really aware of that every day. So because of that, we were like, okay, how do we pick zones where we think, Jeff, I'll let you say it, to put ourselves in a position to get lucky.
There's a high degree of uncertainty about snow quality. And, you know, that's one of the things as I get older as a mountain guide, where I used to feel responsible for the snow quality and feel like, oh man, you know, it hasn't snowed in 2 weeks. The winds have hammered, the sun is hammered. It's going to be crap, but I have to produce a great quality ski day. And I used to equate that with snow quality. And then I realized, wait a minute, there's so much more about this. There's the cultural experience of being in another country, the food, the drink, the views, the terrain, and the camaraderie of exploring the unknown with good friends. And those are all super important components to making a really successful trip. And, you know, you don't go to the Arctic Maritime of Norway or Iceland to ski the best snow quality of your life. I'm sorry. Like, you know, you can find that much better in Utah or Colorado, where you're going to reliably get below or POW or Hokkaido or something like that. However, you can't get views like that anywhere. And you know, you're not the way the light is in the Arctic, it's totally different. And skiing to the water is super magical. So, you know, I would often be really upfront and be like, hey guys, here's two options for today. Here's what I'm thinking. And I think we're going to find reasonable snow quality there, but there'll be some marginal snow as well. But I think based on the weather patterns that we've seen, the winds and the precip, I think these are likely to be decent zones, but we're going to have an adventure, meaning the outcome is uncertain. There is no way to know. And it was funny talking with my brother who works for a heli operation up there. And he was saying like, man, he's like, I've been up here for, I think, 11 years now. And he's like, if you can figure out the patterns reliably, you let me know. Because, you know, a lot of it is we're going to put ourselves in a position to get lucky, but we're going to have to explore. And he was comparing how one helicopter with a couple groups and the other helicopter with a couple groups found radically different snow conditions just on the other side of the valley. And they could see each other. They were that close. but it's that hyper variability. And so, you know, you look at the weather models, you look at the cloud cover, where you think you're gonna get the most sun, and track where the wind direction's coming from and how it's gonna move through the topography. But at the end of the day, there's some guesswork involved. Like, we don't know for certain. And so if you combine that with the uncertainty of snow quality, with the uncertainty of snow stability, it can get super overwhelming. So I found we were using a beta tester for Aspect Abbey up there, and I used it last year, so I knew it worked quite well. And that took a huge amount of the cognitive load, the brain load, and I could put that down. Because we could all sit down on the laptop and do the tour plan and be like, hey, here's our red no-go zones for the avalanche bulletin that we have. And now we can visualize the terrain and see, we actually have quite a few options in this zone that we're at in the Troll Peninsula. And we can ski some really beautiful lines that are super chill and relaxed. And ideally we're facing west to ski into the sunset as the sun reflects off the fjord. And you know, you may not have that access to, like, you know, the beta tester that we were using, but you can use the similar guidelines. And at the start of the week, we were at considerable, and then it shifted to scary moderate. And so for considerable, these are the rules we were using: was keep it under 30 degrees and stay out of the run out zones. And it's really tricky to judge scale there because there are no trees.
And no, that was crazy. There are no
man-made installations. So we relied very heavily on the slope angle tool to check, one, the slope angle underfoot, the slope angle across from us, but also the run out zones. And that's called the alpha angle. That's the fancy term for the run out zone. And when we were worried about D4s in a certain zone, we were like, okay, that is full track. And so we need to be 18 degrees or less. And when you sight through the camera on the phone, it shows that to you in green. 18 and under is green. And then light green, yellowish green is low risk. That's like 19 to 22. And then high risk is in red. So that's, you know, 22 degrees and steeper. And so that was a super effective tool for when you're on-sighting terrain and you're trying to gauge, hey, are we out of the risk of the run out here? Because when we had such unpredictable snowpack, we have to go with reliable terrain. And this allowed us to quantify, do we have reliable terrain in the start zone? Okay, we're keeping it under 30, but there's big peaks around us. Are we out of the run out zone? Because it was rare chance, but it had happened where people had remotely triggered and the whole mountain had come down, and we didn't want anything to do with that.
Yeah. And I think it's worth noting that even when we were doing these quote unquote chill skis, like, some of the descents were still almost 4,000 feet.
Yeah.
Like, it was not. So to put it into perspective, you know, there's no trees. Some of these faces are just, you know, essentially you drop off a peak and it's unlimited where you could go. You know, there's no, you know, we ended up skiing in a different area where it was way more kind of couloirs and that kind of stuff. But at this part of the trip, the stuff we ended up dropping was cool because it was just this huge 30 degree snowfield essentially that you could go down. But the reason that's like a double-edged sword is because we had this realization of, hey, the cool thing about this is we can go do big unlimited GS turns if we want. The bad part is if we accidentally find that tricky spot, that whole unlimited face could go, which is different than here where it's like, hey, this chute that we're skiing in could go, or, you know, this small face could go there. I kind of understand why the D4 was on the table, just because of the sheer scale of the mountains we were skiing.
Yeah. Because it could go all along the ridge line.
Exactly.
And there's no terrain feature to stop it. It's just endless snowfields for miles.
Right.
And you're dealing with 4,000 vertical feet. So that is a lot.
So where are you going to go?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And candidly, with guides, the mindset with guides is on-sighting, which means going to a new terrain for work, is really exciting, but it's also really stressful. Because if you have poor visibility and poor snow stability, you're like, oh my gosh. And having a terrain visualization tool that you can lean on to be like, well, all this stuff is out. And hey, we've got these options here. Okay, which of these options do we think is going to have reasonably good snow quality? Okay, we're going there. And that's how we put ourselves into position to get lucky. And, you know, later on in the week when it was scary moderate, we changed forecast zones and it was no more D4s. It was D3s and scary moderate. So D2 to D3. We're like, okay, 32 degrees and under and stay out of the runout zones. And we use the alpha angle, the runout tool, quite a bit for our regroup zones because we're like, hey, we're right about 30 degrees here. We're towing into avalanche terrain and there's big slopes around us. We've got enough buffer, but we have to be very clear about where we're going to regroup. And everyone could sight through the runout tool on the camera, on the phone, and be like, oh, that's the spot. See that little raised island of rock there? That's where we're going. And I was always surprised how it was much farther than my eye would have said to go. Like my gut would have said, oh, Dave, stop down there. It'll be fine. And then when we shot it, I was like, oh, there is no sense of scale in this landscape. And I'm being overly optimistic. Like if something runs adjacent to our slope or on our slope, we want to make sure we're well out of the runout zone.
Yeah. And just the fact of, which I think we all kind of talked about by the second day or something, maybe the third day, I don't remember, but we were realizing that every time we ended up skiing one of these faces, it ended up being such a longer descent than we thought because of that scale.
Yeah.
And we are all kind of joking about, man, if like you couldn't really outrun something because you have no idea how long you're going to have to outrun it. And the whole 45 degree angle thing, yes, in theory it works, but like we just talked about, like you could just keep ripping a whole face as you kept going. So I think it was a really interesting exercise in taking all this stuff that we know to be true and stuff that I've been learning over this past season, you know, just hanging out with people like you, and then sort of trying to apply those rules, but in like a really shaken up way.
Oh, because you're out of your normal mountain range environment?
Well, yeah, just because all of a sudden everything about what we knew had to be tweaked and toggled and sort of, you know, but yeah, I guess if we do cut away, like we just don't know how big things are. I don't know. I think what you're just talking about with just the scale and how far away things were really struck me with, there's plenty of times where we all thought, hey, like that's a good regroup zone because it's, you know, it's out of the angle, but then when we'd sight it, turns out it was still totally in the slide path because it was way closer than we thought it was. We thought it was a mile away and it was half a mile away or whatever. And then we'd have it the opposite way too, where we'd be like, oh, that thing's too close. And then we'd shoot it and we'd be like, oh my God, that thing's so far away.
Yeah.
Like that's bizarre. Yep. It was kind of like, I mean, you've definitely guided all over the place, but being on this trip and then you did a really good job of including us in the whole process of, it was a very much a team effort. You would definitely come up with the zones, but then we as a team would kind of ideate on what our plan would be. And yeah, it was cool being a part of that in like a totally new zone.
Yeah. Where it makes me think of, I saw this amazing David Byrne exhibit. It was this experiential art exhibit. And it takes maybe an hour and a half or something. And I think it's called something like Perceptions of the Mind and it's all about cognitive science, but done through art. So it was like in this Denver warehouse and you had a tour guide through the night who was David Byrne, and he was walking you through episodes of his life. And it was basically about how unreliable our senses are. So hearing, sight, taste, touch, everything. And it was such a wackadoodle experience that it felt like it went by in like 15 minutes instead of an hour and a half. So that was kind of trippy as well. But it reinforced that what we know to be true, well, it just maybe ain't so. And I love that saying, let's see if I can recall it. It says, it ain't the things you don't know that get you. It's the things you know for certain that just ain't true. And when we used our eye, we're like, oh, that's just like, you know, a couple turns, and it would go forever. That idea of being able to judge slope angle or overhead hazard or, you know, where the runout zone was going to end, having an objective tool that doesn't lie to you was so much more reliable than our eyes. And, you know, we had a fair bit of experience in our group, and we were all continuously surprised through the trip at how our eyes would deceive us. And
yeah,
it often meant ways as well, because the light was, and the color and the shadows. Yeah. It was pretty wild.
Yeah. I was having, so you guys left and I stuck around for another 5 days to go help a buddy with a film project that just happened to be going on there. And this was a theme throughout the whole trip, because I was flying drones while we were there to just get shots of what we were doing. And I kept posting up in places that I was trying to put myself in places that was sort of equidistant from the top to where they were going to stop, and putting myself right out of the way, but then still line of sight for the FPV and all that stuff. And there'd be plenty of times where I'd be like, cool, I'm about halfway. And then I'd get the drone in the air and I'd be flying for like a mile to get up there. And it was just like, dude, how tall is this mountain? What, like, and I was still using, I remember a couple times using the slope angle tool to help me figure out where I wanted to stand. So like I would be out of their way just in general. And then also whatever, just in case a different peak ripped, whatever, just to be out of the runout. And you'd be like angling up at it and be like, okay, that doesn't look so far away. But then as you get up, you know, there's this huge rollover that keeps going. And you're like, oh, well maybe that's not as safe as I thought. If there's this big rollover that's there, like, that could still potentially slide. But yeah, man, it was definitely, I guess have two things before we end this whole thing, which would be one, it would be really cool to give people some, I guess, just reminders or useful tools to use when they're in new places. Like I know for me, something we started using that was really handy was this app called Windy, which is just like this, it's just a wind forecast app. But actually in Iceland, it was super handy. Like I've never used that before, but then being able to see where the wind was going to be coming in for like 24 hours before we went to a zone was actually super handy, because wind slab was a problem there. And so we were like, okay, cool. We know all the wind was coming from the southwest for the last 2 days. You know, that gives us a better idea of what to not go step on. Mm-hmm. What for you would be other tools that are helpful for people in new places? Like we can't use Aspect Avi in Iceland yet. That'll come one day. But, you know, kind of let's give people some useful tools for touring in a new place.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a couple weather apps that are super handy. Windy is one that people like. Meteo Blue is quite handy as well. And there's some powerful tools in there to help you visualize cloud cover and density and what elevations and things like that. And when you're skiing above tree line, that is super important. And then you can also check the timing of when you might get a little window of sun. And, you know, that was pretty funny, is to be like, hey, we're leaving the house at 4 and we'll be done skiing at 9.
Yeah.
And sunsets at 10. Okay. And then twilight is kind of all night.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And that's our weather window. And it kind of works out well if you're jet lagged from Western US too. So it stays a little more in sync with your body clock. So tools like that, and then the local forecast tool, having a little sense about it. Like the Avalanche Forecasting Center in Iceland is relatively recent. So it's not a super mature organization. And every forecasting center, when it comes online, there's going to be some growing pains. And that is not a knock in any way. They have an incredibly difficult challenge there, because it's hyper variable from valley to valley, and even slope to slope. We're like, they're all the same aspect, it's the same elevation, but this is garbage. And if we go over here a couple hundred meters, it's amazing. I've got no plausible explanation. I could sound all guidey and try to steamroller you guys, but I'm like, I don't know why it is, but that's the better snow. We're going there. And so that hypervariability is really tricky. And we experienced that on a peak where we were getting up around, 900 meters off the sea level. So about 3,000 feet. And we were down in our base layer. I remember you guys got a little ahead of me. We weren't in avalanche terrain and we had radios, so it was pretty relaxed. And I was like, guys, I'm sorry. I got to stop and get all the way to my sun hoodie base layer because I am just sweating. And then about 10 minutes later, you guys had said, you made an executive decision before I even got there. Like, we are going down because it got so damn cold so fast in like 10 minutes. And we had like every layer of clothing on, swinging our hands. We're like, what the heck just happened? So when you get these wild temperature and wind variations that are hyper-localized, you're also going to have a large amount of variance and uncertainty with your avalanche forecast. And so the year before when I had been there, it had rained for days, top to bottom, and it was low danger corn snow and blue skies every day. So there was very little uncertainty. It was like ice throughout this whole snowpack, perfect corn. It's low danger. Yeah. And there was a high degree of certainty. But when we got there, it was total wackadoodle conditions. And keeping in mind that it's a huge area with relatively few observations, it's not like the Wasatch where there's a million skiers out there every day in a couple small canyons. You know, it is a very relatively large area with high degree of variability. So keeping that in mind and taking the forecast with a grain of salt, and we know that the forecast, just like the weather forecast, it can be wrong. So ground truthing that, and, you know, shameless product plug, but it's there for a reason. If you verify the forecast in Aspect Avi, even if you're in a place that Aspect Avi doesn't work yet, because we haven't gotten to Europe yet, you know, you can use that simple checklist and like, are we getting shooting cracks, recent avalanches, whoomps, rapid loading from sun or from snow or from wind, or are we getting rapid temperature rise? If it is, flip the forecast to considerable. And especially if you're in a place with a paucity of data and a very large area, you want to go really conservative like that and feel free to pivot at a moment's notice. I think, you know, that's something that we were really flexible with was we've got a rough plan the night before, but we're just gonna have to wait and see what the weather's doing. And we may dash out the door at breakfast, or we may sit and chill out, chill the situation until 4 o'clock in the afternoon when the weather windows forecasted to happen. So I think having that data ahead of time with looking at weather apps and the avalanche forecast, so you have a general sense of what's going on, and then being really flexible during the day to adjust and not being stuck on an objective of being like, hey, there's a lot more than just skiing a steep line to make a really successful trip. And these are the things that are really important to us. Coming back home is paramount, and having a lot of fun with our friends and still being friends when we come home is super important. And it was really easy to make decisions with this group. You know, we'd weigh the pros and cons and then come to a consensus real quickly. And I think having some objective data also that we could all look on the map together and be like, well, all that is red high risk. We're not tangling with D3s today. Made it really easy. And then we could also verify the forecast to make sure that it was sounding truthy for the slopes that we were on and the conditions we were experiencing. We could do a now cast.
Yeah, one of my favorite moments of our whole trip together was, I think it was the third day we were out skiing, and we ended up lucking out. It was a beautiful sunny day the whole time. It was only supposed to be a window. We chose this zone because we figured by the time we got up to, because I think the top of the peak we were going to was like 1,100 meters. Like it was almost 4,000 feet. It was pretty big.
And yeah, like, 1,200 meters. Yeah, 4,000 feet.
So yeah. It was the highest one we did. And we were like, okay, well, if we start at this time, then maybe we'll hit the blue sky for our descent. Turns out it just got blue the second we got out of the car and just stayed blue until sunset at like 11. But the funniest part of this whole thing was we ended up going up the wrong mountain because you just start walking towards these mountains and, you know, there's these big rollovers that, you know, so like anything, when you're going up something, you can't see over all the way to the top. Like chances are, if you see all the way to the top, it's really steep. You don't necessarily want to be under it. But halfway up, we were like, oh, the mountain we're trying to go to is over there. And we had to make a game time decision. And we were like, well, the mountain that's right in front of us looks sweet. And we used the tools that we had at our disposal, which they sort of worked. We had to be pretty crafty about it at the moment. But then we were able to kind of identify that the peak in front of us was going to be skiable and was within our realm of safety. And we were still able to go do it. But it was definitely an unexpected. Like, can you imagine if the weather was worse? Like, where would we have ended up, man? It was beautiful and sunny, and we ended up on the wrong mountain.
That's what people ask me. They say, hey, you know, what do you think about the risk of people navigating off their phone and with zero vis during considerable danger and getting into steep terrain and remotely triggering? And I'm like, well, if it's considerable and you're worried about remote triggers, you don't want to be skiing in avalanche terrain when you can't see. And we had these funky rollovers, and we, you know, a valley we hadn't been to before. And when we got up about 300 meters, 1,000 feet, we were like, well, our intended route is over here and it looks okay. But man, this one a little bit to the right looks amazing. And it's not in the red. It fits our criteria. You know, it's on the run list, meaning it's, you know, it was scary moderate that day. And so we're like, it's under 32 degrees or under 33 degrees and we can stay out of the run out zones. Yeah, that's fair game. And it looked like it had better snow quality and more consistent pitch to ski, more fall line, super high rewards. So we ended up doing a second half lap on it because it was so good. But you're right. If we had had bad visibility, we would have taken that off the run list. And I think, you know, the place we went on day one had way more margins around us, meaning there was tons of low angle terrain with very few steep slopes that we would have to avoid. And that would be a more appropriate place to go if you had poor visibility. And then the other option we always had is, because you never know if the weather's going to come back in, is that, you know, when we're skinning up, we've got our skin track, and that can be a real big help in zero vis, because you've got your skin track to keep hitting on the way down so you don't get seasick and lose track of where you are. So that was always in the back pocket as a escape route. And, you know, if we had had whiteout conditions from the get-go, there was a peak right across from our house where we skied that had big, wide open, chill snow fields of, you know, nice north-facing snow, kind of creamy, velvety powder down low. And, you know, that would be a more appropriate choice where you're like, okay, we've got big margins of safety around us. We're not trying to thread the needle with zero vis.
Speaking of zero vis, it was funny. There was multiple days where we chose a zone specifically because we could see the ocean. So if all else failed, we were like, well, if all else fails and we don't know where to go, we know that generally we'll want to ski towards the ocean because that's where we're going, which was an experience I don't think I can get used to. That was so trippy. Like, look for the sea.
Yeah. So day one, when we were skiing down, it was like, okay, here's our compass heading and there's nothing to mark off because a little cloud bank came in and we were going to get below it. It was a wispy cloud, but it was really hard to see. And it lined up, our line was perfectly aligned with skiing towards the sun and the sun reflecting off the fjord. And we're like, well, that worked out really well. Just aim towards that bright glowing orb in the sky. Follow me. Let's go.
Yeah, that was sweet. Well, let's bore everyone too much with our Iceland tales. But I wanted to ask you, what was the most memorable part of the trip, or something that really stands out to you?
I think it's the combination of sharing experience with people you love in a magical landscape, and we got super lucky where we just had these kind of all-time tours day after day. And they were very unexpected because the weather was looking pretty rough. And just, you know, a lot of the terrain we were in, we were skiing blue square terrain, meaning under 30 degrees and no overhead hazard. We were out of the runout zone. And so we could ski together, and skiing behind Eli was fucking hilarious. Just like, it's like kids being like, hey, you want to go ride bikes, and just goofing off and passing Frank and you guys and just goofing off in a really low stress environment, where if we had pushed it, it would have been really stressful, not nearly as much fun. And I think in the past, I would have had, when I was younger in my career, I would have had that feeling of, man, all these guys are rippers. Like, two of these guys were on the pro circuit and I need to deliver the goods, but the persistent weak layer could be anywhere according to the bulletin, and D3s and D4s. No way. That's ludicrous. I can't manage that as a mountain guide. I'd just be getting lucky. And so it was great to have a tool where we could just all get on the same page with touring, and everyone was like, yeah, we don't want to mess with that. We just want to have fun. And so let's go sniff out the good snow. And a lot of the party skiing together when we were out of avalanche train was just so playful and goofy. I felt like a bunch of dolphins playing in the waves together and stuff like that.
Totally.
And then that sense of adventure of, hey, you know, I think we skied maybe one peak that I'd skied the year before, maybe. And the rest was all on sighting. So it's fun for me to go explore with you guys as well. And I love that sense of, we're not really quite sure how it's going to turn out. Let's go find out. And, you hit a few patches of frozen corn and to link up the powder patches, and you kind of don't remember those. You just remember the good times with your friends.
Totally. Yeah, no, it was definitely, I think one of the most memorable things for me overall was the mindset was so different of, and when we go out here, we're familiar with the terrain, so we have expectations of this should be this way. And so we kind of start creating these expectations before we even get out there. So immediately, if we get out there and it's not the same, we're kind of like, rah. But with this, it was totally adventure-based. We were like, we think it's going to be this way. Could be.
Yeah.
Might not be. The weather could suck. It might start blizzarding. It might get sunny. Like, we just had no expectations, and I think that was such a cool way for us to approach that this type of skiing. It made it feel, I don't want to keep saying adventure-y, but it made it feel almost more relaxed, in a sense of we were all kind of seeing how it was going as it was going.
Yeah.
And that was a really cool experience, especially when we ended up having, we got incredibly lucky. We had so many good days going into it with that mindset, and then having the result be these incredible, incredible runs, like 40-minute runs of just like endless powder at like sunset most days. So it was just like, I was like checking all these boxes. I thought that was just, I think that's probably the most memorable thing for me, was just that the mindset going in, I think, produced an environment that allowed us to have a really open experience, like open to the conditions, and it ended up delivering us a really epic experience.
Yeah. Makes me think of a couple things. I wonder if, one, being jet lagged off the plane and swimming most days in the beach in the Arctic Ocean, if that kind of helped get us into that beginner's mind where you're just open to possibilities and expectations were, I don't know. I always felt like my expectations were really low, where I was like, man, the forecast is not looking good. Snow quality is not looking good. And wow, we got lucky again. And, we did quite a bit of planning to set us up to get lucky, but I didn't feel like I had much control over the outcome, which normally as a mountain guide is a really uncomfortable feeling, as far as the outcome of, are we going to have good snow quality and good visibility, or are we just going to be skiing in the ping pong ball on frozen crust?
Which, to be fair, happened to us a couple times, but it wasn't terrible.
Happened to us a couple.
It wasn't like all I think you
so
might be
right. I wonder if that kind of, we had that mindset of everyone was in sync of just like open to possibilities, really low expectations, and so your H equals R minus E. So H is happiness is really high when your reality is much bigger than your expectations, and every day we're kind of like, well, expectations are pretty low. And then we got out there and we were like, oh, actually, it's really good. So then it felt like we were getting away with something. Like, how did we get good snow again? It's supposed to be crap out there. This is amazing.
Totally. Yeah. No, that was a really, really fun trip, man. That was epic. To anyone who's thinking about going skiing in Iceland, I don't want to blow up the spot because it's pretty cool and quiet there right now, but it was really something. I recommend it. It was epic. Oh, Jeff, I got one more thing that surprised me about our trip. You eat so much. Like, I have to finish with this one story because it is hilarious. And I told a couple of my friends this story and they were like cracking up. So we went to see the Northern Lights one night because we heard they were going to be popping off. And the only place where there was like a little dot of no clouds was like 2.5 hours away, something like that. We had to hop in the car for a little bit. So anyway, we go see the Northern Lights, kind of like they're kind of through the clouds, but we saw them. And then we're driving home. Frank was driving. Thanks, Frank. And Jeff was asleep like the whole drive home. He was just out because it was like, I don't know what it was, 1:30, 2 in the morning. It was late. You have to wait till it's super dark because the sun, it doesn't get proper dark until midnight. But anyway, we do this drive, we do this adventure, we get back to the apartment, to the condo, the cabin, whatever. And it's like 2:30 in the morning. And I go straight up to like the loft where I'm sleeping, and then I go get my water bottle. I come down to like get ready for bed, and Jeff's just in the kitchen, like fully cooking. He's been asleep for like 1.5 hours in the car, and he's just like fully cooking up like a pasta dish at like 2:30 in the morning. And I was just like, "Oh my God!" And then the best thing about it, I was just like, "Dude, are you serious? Like, you're eating right now?" And you're like, "Yeah, man, I'm super hungry, dead serious." And then Eli goes, "Yeah, man, I'll have some noodles." It was like totally validated that you were cooking at 2:30 in the morning. I was like, "Well, all right, I guess I'm the asshole. I'm going to bed, guys. See ya." But it was like,
Well, Dave, if you've ever had a tapeworm, you got to keep those guys
"Dude, you
happy.
gotta go check get that checked, man. I'm concerned about you. Your food bill must be so high." But anyway, well, let's wrap this up. It was truly an awesome trip. Like, I don't think I'll ever forget it. And hopefully we get to go again maybe next year or in some years soon. Do you got any last words for the peeps?
Yeah, I mean, this is a little off topic, but we're really excited to announce that we're offering Aspect Abbey free to everyone who downloads it this spring. And you can have it free for next year. And for all the early adopters out there, thanks so much for your support. You'll have it free for next year because you've already downloaded it. So thanks so much for your support. We're 100% backcountry community funded. We're all on this mission together of saving lives from avalanches. And our investors are excited to share this with everyone. It's the new standard in avalanche safety. It's preventative, proactive avalanche safety gear. So
Heck
go to the App
yeah.
Store, download it. It's only available on iPhone right now, but hopefully we can change that in the future.
Yeah, man, that's exciting. That's awesome.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Okay. With that, I think we'll wrap this up, man. It was good seeing you, and we'll talk soon, eh?
All right. Sounds good, Dave. Cheers.
Thank you so much for listening to All Aspects. If you like what we're doing here, please leave a rating and review. It really is the best way to help others find the show. Thanks again to our business daddy, Aspect Abbey, for making this show possible. To learn more about how Aspect Abbey is making avalanche safety simple, go to aspectabbey.com. If you want to use this powerful new tool on your next backcountry adventure, simply download the app from the App Store and enjoy 30 days free on them. Lastly, special thanks to IceLab for helping us produce this show. You guys rock, and we couldn't do it without you. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you in the backcountry.